This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, we are talking about non-alcoholic beer, and we are actually recording together in the same room for the first time in an age.
Yeah, we're going to be toasting. We took some rapid tests this morning.
Yeah.
We're going to be toasting with non-alcoholic beer to togetherness.
Yes. We wanted to wait and do this episode together because, you know, drinking alone seems so sad.
Yeah, I just knocked a sleeve of saltines onto the floor.
Okay.
It's okay.
Well, Matthew, memory lane. So, wow, it's so weird to tape an episode.
Yes. that's how we introduced that segment. So, memory lane. So,
Okay. So, I don't think I ever can. I think, like, probably a lot of people in 2022, I never really considered purchasing a non-alcoholic beer type beverage until the pandemic, when I found myself drinking more alcohol than I previously had.
Yeah, I never thought about, no, that's not true. I do have memory lane. But my memory lane is way, way back. Then it sort of hits a dead end and then restarts recently.
Okay.
So when I was a kid growing up in Southwest Portland, I used to go to whatever the supermarket was, like in the Vermont Hills shopping center. In the very corner of the beer section, there was one brand that I think was called No Beer. It might have been Near Beer, but I remember
Near Beer is such a good name.
I know. I think I remember it being called No Beer was the brand, and they would sell it to kids. It tasted terrible, but we would sometimes buy it just because, like, you know, we would feel like we were drinking beer and we would be cool.
Wait, do you think it tasted terrible because it actually tasted terrible, or did it taste terrible because you guys were kids drinking something that tasted like beer?
So I think probably both.
Okay.
And we'll get into why I think that is when we get into kind of the history and technology of non-alcoholic beer.
Okay.
But
okay.
I think it was not a very good product. But also, like, we were not used to the taste of beer. And I think probably we bought it, like, two or three times at the most. But, man, we thought we were cool.
So I don't think I had ever tasted non-alcoholic beer until we were opening Delancey, actually. And we wanted to have a non-alcoholic beer on the menu, which kind of surprises me now in retrospect. I don't know where we got that idea, but I'm glad that we did.
Yeah, me too.
And the one that we wound up carrying was Bitburger. I feel like it's called, like, Bitburger Drive.
Is that right? Or is Drive a different one? I think you're right.
I can't remember. Anyway, but that was the one we wound up carrying. And I remember feeling really glad because I actually have a couple family members who no longer drink alcohol. And, like, it just felt really good to be able to have something on the menu for them. It's, like, such a small thing. But
yeah,
I feel like
absolutely.
Until recently, there hasn't been a lot of talk about why one would choose to drink a non-alcoholic beverage when there's an alcoholic version around.
Right. So I had certainly, like, thought about, like, you know, mocktails and, like,
totally.
You know, the idea of choosing a non-alcoholic beverage, which I often usually do anyway, but had not thought about non-alcoholic beer until you mentioned it, like, a couple months ago
yes.
and said that you liked Athletic Brewing, which I had never heard of and didn't realize there was such a thing as a non-alcoholic craft brewery. There are several of them.
Yes.
And I went out to the store and bought some right away, and it was great.
Well, I'm really excited to learn more about how this stuff is made, because the part of me that also, like, there's always a part of me that's kind of like, what is this stuff?
Yeah.
Like, is this, am I actually drinking something that's like, I don't know, like, highly processed,
probably
like, weird.
No? So it depends. We'll get into all the technology.
I mean, I love drinking stuff that's highly processed.
I mean, like,
don't
we
get
did
me wrong,
the whole the like, Coke Freestyle machine where wherever we camped out in front of that Coke Freestyle machine and drove everybody
but
crazy
like,
at that pizza place.
Okay, but even so, you know, when we did our White Claw, like boozy cider. What? Boozy cider. No, sorry, our sparkling. What do you think? What are these called?
Hard seltzer.
Hard seltzer.
Yeah. Literally, you're not the only one. Everybody's forgotten about hard seltzer at this point. I think the trend is over.
Wait, really? Already?
Yeah.
No, just that it's winter, Matthew.
I guess. But I heard it was like way down last summer.
Okay.
And people were drinking what instead? I don't know. Boozy cider.
Okay. Anyway, hold on. Even though we've done a hard seltzer episode,
yeah.
and I understand how that stuff is made.
I've forgotten, so I'm glad you understand.
I don't remember anymore. But anyway, even then, like when I taste it, I always feel like a little bit queasy. Like there's a sense that like I'm drinking something that was never intended by nature.
So,
beer and like alcohol is something that just happens.
Right. So I think with hard seltzer, if I recall correctly from that episode, for tax reasons, they're not usually made by just like mixing a little vodka with a bunch of seltzer, because then that's taxed at like a liquor rate. So they have to like brew it and then remove a bunch of stuff. I think the non-alcoholic beer is less processed than that because you're not trying to remove the things that make it taste like a fermented beverage, which with hard seltzer, you are trying to remove those things.
Right.
And so there's going to be more processing to make that happen.
I don't know why I even care.
Oh, yeah. I don't either. Like I drank a whole bottle of Squirt the other day because I was sick. So...
Yeah, no, I mean, hand me like a can of Coke and I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, a can of Coke is really good.
Yeah.
No, I think it's like the kind of an uncanny valley thing, like because you think of, you never think of soda as a natural product, but beer, you know, it's got like a venerable history and you just like stir some grains up in a pot and magically it becomes beer. And, you know, the idea that process is being tampered with and this is a, sort of like a...
Like a Franken-beer?
A Franken-beer. Like, I think that's what's kind of triggering that idea, but it's really not.
Okay, cool. Well, let's talk about it.
Okay. Can we like start tasting or do we have to save the tasting for the end?
I think we should start tasting because, you know, if there's one thing that I feel pretty strongly about beer, it's that most of the time you want to drink it really cold.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
I mean, have you ever, are you new to drinking beer, Matthew? I sound like I'm tasting something I've never tasted before. Have you had beer?
I'm excited for my first time. Okay. I'm glad we could. I've been waiting. I've been saving myself for this record.
So out of practice on how to talk about food.
Well, I mean, you know, it is true that like in England, beer is often drunk at like cellar temperature, which is not ice cold.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not my favorite.
It's not my favorite either. Sometimes I will often like put the glass in the freezer before pouring the beer, which is very satisfying.
Okay, Matthew.
How do we cheese plate this?
Okay, well, so let's start out by saying what we've got.
Yeah.
Okay. So, admittedly, we have sort of loaded the deck with a lot of Athletic Brewing.
Yeah.
Athletic Brewing Company beverages, which we both really like. But I've also picked up a bottle of Lagunitas Hop, which they used to sell, or they used to market it as like Lagunitas Hoppy Refresher.
Okay.
I remember I heard an ad on a podcast like 3 years ago and I went out looking for this stuff and I couldn't find it anywhere. Anyway, now it's called Lagunitas Hop.
But your quest came to an end. You went on a 3-year quest to find Lagunitas Hop.
And now it's at Delancey.
They tried to throw you off by changing the name.
Yes, yes. Anyway, so what this is more of just like a hops flavored sparkling water.
Yeah, and I've had something like there's a soda in Japan I think called Dakara, it comes in various flavors, and like they did a limited edition hops flavor, and I sort of remember what that was like, and so I imagine this is going to be similar. Okay. We also have O'Doul's Amber. Why did I get the O'Doul's Amber rather than the original O'Doul's? I don't know. I think it's just because I like the idea of an amber ale. It sounds good.
Okay. Okay.
And so that's like a big mass market brand. I remember like the rest of my memory lane is like remembering when like O'Doul's and Miller Sharps and like the big name non-alcoholic beers came on the market.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I've ever bought O'Doul's before.
I haven't
but now
either.
I
haven't either. Okay, so
I think we should start with the hoppy refresher because that one's kind of not really a beer.
I think we should too. All right, Matthew. So open it up. So I should say that this is not a perfectly clear sparkling water, right?
No,
like, it's in a clear bottle, but when you look at it, it looks slightly yellow.
Yep, it's a slightly, like, yeah, if you brought this into the doctor, they would say you are drinking enough water.
Yes.
Mm. I kind of like that.
Well, so here's my thing. Like, my first few sips of it, I remember the first time I had it at Delancey, Brandon very excitedly brought it over to show me that they had it. And I had, like, I split a bottle of it with him, and I really enjoyed it. So I went out and bought it, and then I discovered, upon drinking it at home and paying more attention to it, that the aftertaste makes me feel weird.
Okay. I'm I was about to say, I'm listening for the aftertaste. I don't know. Like, it is like, you know what it's sort of like? Because it has like a sweet, like, soda note to it. It's sort of like a shandy.
Yeah.
Like a beer mixed with lemon lime soda.
It almost has a sweetness to it that reminds me of like stevia or like an artificial sweetener.
Yeah, I get
that. Do you get that?
But like I do think this would be refreshing. It doesn't satisfy like, you know, I want a beer.
Yes.
It's something different, but I do like it.
I'm really enjoying it today. But yeah,
when I like the fragrance a lot.
Yes. Oh, it smells like flowers or something. It's got like an elderflower kind of smell.
Mm-hmm.
When I first went out and bought it after having it at Delancey, I was so psyched. And then I wound up like giving 4 out of the 6 bottles to Brandon because I decided, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's something I'm going to go out and buy, but I don't buy a lot of like sodas in general. So, but if like there was a, you know, if someone opened up a cooler and it was full of ice and there were a bunch of frosty bottles of Lagunitas hop sticking out of the ice.
This would be really good if you were at the beach.
Yeah,
though.
I was just going to say the beach.
Yeah. If you're at the beach and it's really hot and like, you know, maybe you want something alcoholic, but you also know that you're sweating profusely.
Let's go to the beach this summer. It's going to be really hot. We're going to bring a cooler. It's going to be full of ice. We're going to open it up. There's going to be Lagunitas hop inside. The cops will come over and be like, are you drinking beer at the beach? We're like, no, man, it's Lagunitas hop.
Okay, so what is this stuff, though?
And we'll realize that our life is a commercial.
What do we say? What is this?
Oh, what do we call it?
No, what is this stuff? What is actually in there? Read the bottle.
Oh, okay. I have no idea what you're talking about. Made with hops, yeast, and water. Life is uncertain. Don't sip. It does not have an ingredient list. Okay, wait. A zero alcohol, zero carb, and zero calorie refreshment made using everything we know about hops. It's a variation on a theme of 25 years of edgy brewing.
Ooh, edgy.
Yeah, they've been
brewing.
Edging for 25 years.
God, it's going to feel so good.
Yeah. Finally. Yeah, that's why you were on that 3-year quest. I don't know. Oh, wait, no. Okay, sorry. Ingredients. Carbonated water, dried hops, nutritional brewer's yeast, natural flavors. So it has no sugar, even though it does, and no artificial sweeteners, even though it tastes sweet.
But what natural flavors? Couldn't that be stevia?
I guess it could be stevia. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Anyway, okay, I like it more this time than I did the other night. I don't know what my deal is.
No, I think it's okay.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
Let's do O'Doul's next.
Okay. You should start telling me about these things.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I should say that the reason that I got interested in...
Yes?
I'm trying to remember actually how I decided, because the truth is when I am drinking alcohol at home, I tend to be a wine drinker.
Yeah.
And the occasional cocktail drinker. So I, you know, I have like...
When Tony Negroni comes
in. Yeah. I have like a small bar, you know, so that I can make like a couple cocktails I like and then wine. But the thought of buying like a wine facsimile would never occur to me. So if I don't want to have alcohol, I feel like it becomes automatically like you're replacing it with some sort of fruity soda or fruity mocktail situation. And I saw somebody on Instagram, I don't remember who, posting a picture of Athletic Brewing can. And they said that it was delicious. And so I tried it and thus began my recent odyssey of non-alcoholic beer.
Okay.
Odyssey with, odyssey of. Chain me to the mast.
Yes. All right.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers to O'Doul's.
This tastes kind of like a mass market American beer.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Which is not usually my first choice, but it's certainly not something I dislike.
If you were at the beach, let's say.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I've heard this called like a lawnmower beer. It's a little bit sweet.
It is a little sweet.
Yeah.
But that's also reminiscent of a beer, like a beer.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, few beers are truly non-alcoholic, although some of them are, and we'll get to that.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of overlap in the history of non-alcoholic beer and low-alcohol beers, like small beers and session beers and that sort of thing. And the history sort of blends
together.
Did you
just say small beers?
Yeah.
Is that like another word for a session beer?
I think so. I think a small beer is like, it's like the second beer you make with the same ingredients. And so it doesn't have as much dissolved sugar, and so it doesn't produce as much alcohol.
So it's like not extra virgin olive oil, it's just
It's the virgin beer, yes.
Okay.
So actual like marketed non-alcoholic beer goes back like to the mid-20th century. Well, okay. No, it goes back to Prohibition. And so, you know, Prohibition established like the line was you could sell the product if it had 0.5% alcohol or less.
Okay.
Anything below that was considered alcohol-free and not subject to prohibition. And so brewers started learning to make non-alcoholic beer. It was not a big part of the market after Prohibition ended until like the 60s and 70s.
Okay.
At least in the U.S.
And does that go with the rise of like the naming of alcoholism as a...
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay.
And more so than that, the naming of drunk driving.
Ah.
Which really, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, like, you know, really became a force in the 80s.
Yes.
And so you started to see in especially like late 80s, early 90s, O'Doul's, Miller Sharp, Bitburger Drive, all marketed as for this is the beer that you drink if you're the designated driver or if you have to drive.
Okay.
That was like the key to the marketing. It was not really like broader than that for like, you know, when you are choosing not to drink alcohol.
And it's interesting
to think,
too, when I have bought non-alcoholic beer here in the state of Washington, I get carded. Did you get carded?
I did get
buying
carded,
this?
Absolutely.
Do all states do that? Or are there places where minors can buy, quote unquote, non-alcoholic beer, even if it's 0.5%?
Yeah, it varies by state.
Okay. Okay. Can I have a saltine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell me more.
Right. So, like I said, like when I was buying gross non-alcoholic beer in the 80s, like that was before the big brands. So it was available.
Yeah. Why were you buying it then?
Because my dumb friends and I wanted to pretend we were drinking beer.
Oh, okay.
And so that was like prior to the launch of,
God,
of O'Doul's.
I love that you wanted to pretend you were drinking beer. And so you bought non-alcoholic beer rather than getting somebody to buy you real beer.
Oh, yeah. No, we
really sweet.
That would have been. So actually, no, one time I was on a car trip with a friend and his dad let me and my friend split a beer in the back seat.
Oh, I think in the back seat?
Maybe this wasn't like the best dad in retrospect. And we got pretty drunk from half a beer because we were children.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
okay.
That was like my first beer.
Do you remember like the kids who had like the cool / in retrospect bad dads growing up?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I always felt a certain like, especially in high school, I always felt a certain like queasy feeling around those dads.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. You probably even more so than me, but yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, like something is wrong here.
But also, like, you know, I like admired their independent spirit and their grit. And so I wanted to grow up to be a bad dad. And I hope that I fulfilled that destiny.
That's the American dream.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then, you know, so the big companies like realizing that, okay, like, you know, we need to take drunk driving seriously, or at least as seriously as we can being a beer company, like, you know, got in on the action in the around, I think O'Doul's was the first big one that was introduced in 1990.
And is it made by somebody else, like by Coors or Busch or something like that?
Which company it is, but all of the big breweries have multiple non-alcoholic brands now.
Okay. Okay.
It's like Miller Sharps, obviously made by Miller.
Yeah.
And so that really dominated the non-alcoholic beer market in the U.S. For several decades until about the last dozen years or so, mm-hmm. when non-alcoholic craft breweries with a much broader marketing idea of, like, it's not just for, you know, this is the beer you're stuck drinking when you have to drive, but like there are lots of reasons to choose a non-alcoholic beer either some of the time or all of the time, so let's make a good one.
Yeah.
And so that's like Athletic Brewing, Bravis, Well-Being, and brews from existing craft brewers like Lagunitas.
I've never heard of Bravis or
I hadn't either Well-Being. Until I started looking around, but there are, like, I think there are probably, these are like the three that I ran across just like with some quick Googling, and all their stuff sounded good.
I'd be curious to do something like go to BevMo or something,
yeah.
like someplace that is exclusively beverages and see how much wider the selection there is.
Yeah, no, I think we could have come up
store.
With, like, if we had gone on a longer quest, if we had like edged longer.
Yeah, but we already waited 25 years.
I know. This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, take a minute and picture that thing that you've always wanted to learn.
All right, I'm picturing the thing.
Okay.
And you know, what if I get lost in the wilderness?
Well, okay, this is the thing?
This is the thing.
Oh, okay. Well, so picture learning it from someone who's literally the best at getting lost in the wilderness.
No.
In the world.
You don't understand, Molly. I want to get found in the wilderness.
Oh, okay.
So, and for that, I turn to Jesse Krebs, who is an internationally recognized expert on wilderness survival. She has a class on Masterclass, and she teaches like the five basic needs. And if you think number one is water, you're wrong. She teaches you how to use a knife, how to use rope, one of your most important tools in the wilderness. I don't think I'm going to get stuck in the wilderness, but if I do, I'm going to be really happy that I took this class on Masterclass.
Yeah, well, Masterclass is where you should go if you don't just want to think about learning something, but you actually want to do it with one-on-one classes with the world's best.
Yeah, if you want to learn singing from Christina Aguilera, if you want to learn shooting threes from Steph Curry, there's only one place in the world to do those things, unless you happen to know those people, which you don't.
Yeah, you don't. And every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk.
And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. Mixed with blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar for the perfect balance of sweet, salty, and sour every time. Discover legendary taste with Cayman Jack, America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.
So how is this stuff made?
I will tell you if you let me open another can.
Okay,
here.
Which one
By the way,
open?
I love how like my dining room is turning into like a sea of open beer bottles and cans like a dorm room.
Uh-huh.
Very nostalgic.
What I love is that I keep looking at this glittery birthday card that's propped up on the windowsill across from me, and it's just a big 18. And like we could pretend that it's you, that it's not your child December who just turned 18. You
right.
want to?
Okay, yeah, for my 18th birthday.
I love that it's also right next to some trivets, because every 18-year-old needs trivets.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
That's
okay.
Right.
When, cheers.
What did you put on your 18-year-old registry besides trivets? Or was it just all trivets?
Oh, I put those like candle holders that keep the wind from blowing out your candle.
Yes.
A hurricane, it's called. I put those on my 18-year-old
Perfect.
Registry. Yeah, okay, cheers. What is this?
This is the Cerveza Atletica Copper Ale. So I think it's supposed to be, well, based, I think it's supposed to be like a Dos Equis style.
Okay. That is the vibe I'm getting here.
Yeah. It's got a nice head on it.
If somebody told you that this was Dos Equis.
I believe anything people tell me. I'm very trusting.
Or like Corona.
Yeah.
It's Corona colored. This with a lime in it, right? Again, at the beach.
That's right. I think it's what we're saying is it's been too long since we've been to the beach.
I think
that's the point of this episode. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. What do you think of this one?
I think it's okay.
Okay.
Honestly, I think it's kind of similar to the O'Doul's.
Yes.
It's a little bit more complex and it has a better head.
It, to me, has a little bit more of a aftertaste than the O'Doul's. But yeah, it's not thrilling.
Yeah.
But it gets the job done.
Yeah.
Okay, go on. Tell me
how
this is made.
You asked me how this stuff is made. Okay, so there are a few different ways to make a non-alcoholic beer, and with one exception, all of them are in current use and often like multiple different methods by the same brewery, depending on like what they want to highlight in the finished product.
Okay.
So they are, first you make beer and you remove the alcohol. That is one overall method, and there are some sub methods within this.
Okay.
So the simplest way is to make a beer and then heat it to above the boiling point of alcohol, but which is 173 degrees Fahrenheit, but below the boiling point of water, which is 212, and the alcohol boils off.
I see a lot of problems with this.
Yeah, the biggest one is then you get cooked beer.
Yeah.
And it tastes bad.
Right. It would be like making jam or something. I feel like it would...
It would be like making jam.
Exactly like making...
And so...
so much fruit.
This is probably the method that was used for the no beer that I bought when I was 13.
Oh,
and
okay.
So it would have tasted like a really lousy beer.
Okay.
Like just with like dead flavors. And then, of course, because like the in most of these methods, the carbonation is removed through the de-alcoholizing method, you have to recarbonate the beer as well.
Okay. Okay. Through like forced carbonation.
Yep.
Okay.
So another option is to do the same thing, but in a low pressure chamber so that the boiling point of water and alcohol is greatly reduced.
Okay. So in this, so doing this, you could still boil off the alcohol, but you wouldn't be cooking the flavors
right.
and all those things.
By the way, if this sounds like the opposite of distillation, it is.
So remind me how distillation
Distillation
works.
Is you're like you're capturing the alcohol and like you know, stuff that's dissolved in it in a separate chamber, because that's the part you want.
Okay.
In this case, you want the stuff that's left behind.
Got it. Okay.
And
what,
so,
do people ever sell like the remainder, like the stuff that's left
that's
over
a good question.
When you distill? Like,
the answer is yes.
Whiskey or.
So there have been some like beer flavored liquors, and I don't mean like malt liquor, which is just a term for like a high alcohol beer, but like a 40% like beer liquor that is made through distillation. I don't think I've ever tasted one. I don't think it's like a very popular class of product.
Right.
But it does exist.
Okay. Okay. Go on.
Something beer nerds would definitely know more about than I do.
Okay.
So when you do the low pressure method, like that is, you know, it's still going to change the flavor of the product some because it's still being, has to be heated, but much less than heating it to like 170 degrees.
Okay.
Or another method is to take your beer with alcohol in it and do reverse osmosis.
Okay.
So reverse osmosis is you make a semi-permeable membrane and force the beer through it so that what comes out, you know, on the other side of the membrane is the water and alcohol and some dissolved acids. And then on the side of the membrane that you push the beer through, you get this beer flavored sludge.
Oh, that sounds so good. Is that what we're drinking?
I don't know like which method was used for each of the beers.
Wait, you said beer flavored sludge. What happens to that stuff? Is that what we drink?
Yes. So then you take the beer flavored sludge, which has all the beer flavors in it, and you add carbonated water, and now you have non-alcoholic beer.
Oh, that seems like that's the best method.
It's the most expensive method because you need like, you know, high pressure pumps and semi-permeable membranes and stuff. But it is one of the best methods. Except for the like just boil the shit out of it method. All of these are good methods. And like, I'll get there in just a minute.
Okay.
Another option is to stop the fermentation before alcohol is produced.
That seems like it would taste very different.
So it does. So that's Klaus Toller's approach. One thing you can do is you can make a wort, which is a soup of malted barley and water.
Okay.
And just not add yeast at all. So what you get there is a very sweet brew that doesn't taste much like beer. And
like barley tea?
It tastes malted. So it's more flavorful than barley tea and probably richer brew.
Okay.
And then you can carbonate it. This is not a good way to make like a beer, but for making like a fruit beer or like something where you're going to be adding flavors, other flavors and acid, it can be a good base for that.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Or you can brew a less sweet wort by using like types of malt that produce less sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Then you ferment it all the way and just the full fermentation stops at less than 0.5% alcohol because there wasn't much sugar in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so it's this all how Klaus Toller is made?
Yes. Yes. Klaus Toller uses all of these approaches.
Interesting. God, I wish we had some.
Yeah, I did not see any.
Okay.
Or you can do regular brewer's yeast, regular malt, and filter out the yeast when the fermentation has just started and not gotten very far.
Okay.
And so that's enough fermentation to produce some beery flavors, but not more than 0.5% alcohol.
Okay.
And again, like none of these is like the right way to do it. They just all produce different flavors. And, you know, you think about like what kind of product you're trying to make and how you're going to market it. And you choose and like how much money you have and what kind of factory. And you choose the de-alcoholization or non-alcohol producing method that fits with that.
It's interesting to think about, for instance, the Lagunitas hop, aka hoppy refresher, and to think about how the beer flavor was achieved there, right? Because
yeah.
It is truly a sparkling
the
water.
The hoppy refresher, yeah, I think what you're tasting is only the flavor of hops, which is a big part of the flavor of beer.
Okay. And so, and you can get like hops flavor?
I guess. I mean, can you get hops flavor?
Sure.
I mean, I guess if you go to a homebrew store, you can probably get all kinds of stuff.
That's true. Okay.
So I learned a lot of this on the website that we'll link to of a non-alcoholic beer brand called Groovy. That's G-R-U with an umlaut, V-I.
Okay.
And I did not find any of their products. I would like to try them because on their website, they talk about which techniques they use, which are arrested fermentation, no fermentation, and de-alcoholizing. I think I don't remember which type of de-alcoholizing. And they talk about how which of their beers are produced using which method and why they chose that method.
Okay. Okay, so now we've got the one that you and I both started out with. It's the Athletic Brewing Upside Dawn, which they describe as their what?
Golden.
Okay.
Yes. This I drank like a whole six pack of a couple weeks ago, not all in one day.
What do you think of this? I think that this is
delicious.
I think
it's great. This is by far the best one. It's got the best balance of like, I don't like a very hoppy beer.
Me
but
neither.
Like a non-alcoholic beer, I think needs to have like enough hops so that it doesn't just taste sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first one that we tried that has really a balance of sweetness and bitterness for me.
Yeah. I agree. It's interesting because when I ran out of my first six pack of this, I realized I had like a couple cans of Pilsner from a local brewery that I've really loved that Pilsner. And so I opened it up one night when I wished that I had this non-alcoholic Athletic Brewing beer. And I couldn't get over how much sweeter and thicker it felt. I think that one thing I do really like about at least what we've tasted so far of the Athletic Brewing non-alcoholic beers is that there is a slight thinner quality to them than alcoholic beer, but it isn't a negative thing.
Yeah, I agree. It makes them, I would say, like more refreshing
overall. Yes.
Although, like the next one we're going to try is a dark beer that I'm very curious about.
Okay, let's try it.
So one, like I said, like, you know, you choose your production method based on what your goal is, and that can be a flavor goal, but also it can be an amount of acceptable alcohol goal. So, and specifically what I mean is, like, you know, for sale in the U.S., 0.5% or less is the standard pretty much everywhere. That is not true, for example, in Iran, where non-alcoholic beer is super popular, and it is illegal to sell any beverage that has any alcohol. So it has to be 0%.
Okay.
And so in Iran, non-fermented and industrially de-alcoholized are the only acceptable methods.
How is athletic brewing made?
That's a good question, and I don't know, but I am going to guess that because they have a wide variety of beers, like we're trying three of them, but they have at least 10, that they're using multiple methods depending on the flavor profile of the beer they're going for.
Okay, cool. Okay, so let's taste this last one.
Yeah.
This is the All Out. Is it a stout?
It's the, yeah, All Out Stout, extra dark.
Okay.
And I love dark beers, so I ordered this one online.
Wow, you really went the extra mile.
Yeah.
Okay, nice color. Ooh, so, nice head. Look at that.
Yeah, this looks really good. So, okay. Yeah, I got to say, for me, to be honest, like, I have been drinking less because, like, I feel like this happened to me with coffee at some point. Also, like, I just got to an age where, like, every time I drink alcohol, even, like, one beer, like, I feel crummy later. But that's okay. Like,
It is okay. And, there's a part of me... So I have always been someone who had quite low tolerance or was at the low end.
I like this a lot.
You like this? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, that's really nice.
It really tastes like a stout.
Yeah. And it also has that like not as heavy feeling in my mouth.
Yep.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
I'm so glad I have 5 more cans of that.
God, that's so cool. I think that my feeling is, and I assume this is like very common, for a lot of people during this pandemic time, is my tolerance has gone up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still not, I don't feel like it's a problem, but at the same time, I'm just very aware that it's gone up and that bothers me.
Yeah.
It just bothers me. I remember a time like when I was straight edge in high school.
Oh, sure. Did you have X's written on your hands?
I didn't drink caffeinated coffee. And I remember thinking, like, I never want to be dependent upon a substance. Like, I couldn't imagine how I would ever allow myself to have coffee every day because I knew I would develop dependence on
sure.
it. And I certainly have. And I love coffee. And I'm now like, woohoo, whatever. I'm just going to keep drinking my coffee. But I don't want to feel that way about alcohol.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. And so, like, But on the other hand, like, I love having a beer, like, just kind of the idea of it.
Yes, I know.
A frosty glass. Like, I love having beer with pizza. I love drinking a beer while making dinner. That's very satisfying. And I'm gonna be buying this more. I don't think I'm going to stop buying alcoholic beer, but I'm certainly going to be buying this more often.
I now have been making sure that I always have this in the house. Because, I think that a lot of us are used to having some sort of an adult beverage in that window of the day that is like work is over, the evening hasn't really begun yet, and there's sort of this transition period, right?
Yeah.
And I find that's when I really want something that feels special. And these actually feel like special.
They do. Like they're a little bit expensive, mm-hmm. and they cost as much as alcoholic beer. I guess,
yes,
as a craft
they do.
Beer. Yeah,
they do.
I think adult beverage is a good term because, like, to me, this still feels like an adult beverage in the sense that kids would fucking hate it.
Yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
I offered, like, you know, my 18-year-old, like, you know, can I pour you a little non-alcoholic beer? And they were like, no, gross. So.
Well, and that is different to me from, for instance, the Lagunitas Hop, which still does feel more like something I would drink in the afternoon.
In the afterlife.
But I would drink Lagunitas Hop in the afternoon. It feels like it's a different category. Not that I wouldn't drink a beer in the afternoon.
In the afterlife, I'm planning to drink Ambrosia. Is that a thing?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Although it's also like a weird
fruit salad. With like grapes and marshmallows and
gelatin,
stuff.
I think maybe. Or coconut.
Yeah. Well, we know way too much about that.
We do. Okay. Well, I'm really curious to hear from listeners who maybe are in other parts of the country, maybe with access to other craft non-alcoholic beers. Hold on. Is this from Colorado? No.
Where is it from?
Athletic Brewing is from San Diego, California and Stratford, Connecticut.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. And like, so the ingredients, like, because it's not an alcoholic beverage, they have to put the ingredients, and the ingredients are water, organic Vienna malt, malted barley, oats, wheat, hops, yeast.
God, that's delightful.
That's the dark beer.
Love it.
Yeah, but it's got, like, I was looking at the ingredients to see, like, did they put, like, some coffee flavoring in, which, like, you know, beer, like dark beer makers often do. And no, it's just like the natural flavor of a dark malt.
Well, and the other thing that I have to remind
dark
myself.
Dark malt was that guy from The Phantom Menace, the red face.
Yeah. Dark malt, mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing is that even these, which are expensive, quote unquote, for beer, it's like, what, like between $10.99 and $12.99 for a six pack. It's still on par with a decent grocery store bottle of wine.
Yeah,
right.
For sure.
And anyway, I get way more evenings.
Yeah,
out
like Kroger brand wine,
which is, as everyone knows, is my favorite.
One thing I ran across, and like I kind of noticed this the first time, like I drank a whole can of the Upside Dawn. Like,
did you feel trashed?
I felt like a little bit tipsy.
Okay.
And this is a common thing, like, you know, that you're, the way you experience any substance depends a lot on how you expect to feel.
Okay.
So, like, you know, that they talk about, like, drug, mindset, and setting, and, like, mindset is a big part of your response. So, like, I feel like I'm not even, like, totally giving up the intoxicating effect because I can enjoy the placebo effect.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and I'm not even joking.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that I think for me, well, like a lot of foods, the first few sips or the first few bites of something are often the ones that like really hit those pleasure sensors,
yeah.
You know, and then there's this, you know, diminishing returns situation. And the first few sips of these really great non-alcoholic beers are absolutely as pleasurable to me as their alcoholic counterparts.
Yeah.
And so that too, like that hit of pleasure is important to me. And I get that here.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
Amazing.
Yeah, maybe we can come back around to this topic because like we do this show every week and we've done every food topic. So,
We have?
Yeah, no, I forgot. I was looking at our list and we've now done
we've done all the foods.
Every food, every ingredient, every dish.
Wow. Everything. Mm-hmm. It's over.
So bye everybody. No, but I would like to taste more of these either on a professional or non-professional basis.
Great. Well, let's hang out, Matthew.
Yeah. Let's
next time. Let's go to the beach.
Yeah. Let's drink these in a very unprofessional way next time.
Oh, great. Okay. Okay.
A lot of like spilling and like spraying each other with beer foam and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's time for segments.
Let's start with spilled mail.
This one is from listener Kara.
So the gist is that during our Damn Perfect Snacks episode, Molly said she did not want to make a burger for breakfast because of the lingering animal fat smell.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm so fun.
Listener Kara goes on, during the pandemic and working from home, I've adopted the process, the practice of eating any food any kind of day. For example, yesterday I had some cold kielbasa and a pierogi for breakfast, which might normally be considered dinner.
Yes.
My thought process is, why would I wait until dinner to eat what I really want to eat now? My question to both of you is, are there any foods you only eat at a certain time of day?
Ooh.
Or how do you feel about eating non-traditional breakfast, lunch, dinner foods during other meal times?
I love this question. So I have always skewed sweet for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I don't tend to ever reach for what I consider to be like lunch or dinner foods at breakfast.
Okay.
I just don't.
I love doing that.
I know you do. This
yeah,
is why we're
pizza
not
for
married.
Breakfast. That's right. No, if we were married, like that would be
never fly because you have to eat the same breakfast
yeah,
as your
exactly.
spouse.
Exactly. That's what Dr. John Gottman said yeah. in the email that
yeah.
he sent me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. After you do your love maps.
Yeah. Then you gotta. My love language is the same breakfast every day of our lives.
Bite for bite.
Like yeah, if we don't split this waffle, it's over.
Go on.
I know. So I agree with listener Kara that this is like my general philosophy is like if whatever you want to eat any time of day, like go for it. Who cares? And I love pizza for breakfast as probably my favorite breakfast, although I do also like a sweet breakfast. Like this morning I had some Bob's Red Mill peanut butter granola, which is very tasty. And it's
okay.
Basically like a granola bar that somebody punched. But I have noticed, thinking about this, that breakfast for dinner used to seem like a real treat maybe like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, like it seemed like less and less like a viable option for some reason.
So I got to tell you, I had a very recent experience with this. So
okay.
growing up, So my mom was, you know, on diets all the time. And so I think I've talked here about our definition of breakfast for dinner when I was growing up.
We have, but I don't remember.
Okay. So I think this was actually like a suggested meal in some diet my mom was doing. And it was either like sautéed or steamed spinach with a fried egg on top and shredded cheddar cheese on top of that. Okay.
Sounds good.
Really good. Except, I mean, I think we always had it with steamed spinach.
Okay.
It much better with sautéed spinach. Sure. Anyway. So growing up, that was what I thought of as breakfast for dinner. And I have had like a sweet breakfast for dinner very few times in my lifetime. And so recently, Ash and June and I decided that we were going to do breakfast for dinner. And June was so excited because our main like special breakfast is pancakes.
Okay. Yeah.
So this meant pancakes for dinner.
Yeah.
So I had some breakfast sausage, cooked that up. We did pancakes. We wound up deciding not to cook eggs because we had all eaten eggs at lunch.
Sure. I was going to say, I love making myself an omelet for lunch. That's one of my favorite things.
I love eggs for any meal of the day. Actually, I prefer eggs for lunch or dinner over breakfast. Anyway, so I made breakfast sausage and my usual pancakes. And I have to say, it was the most joyless experience of eating pancakes I think any of us have had. Like, we sat in silence around the table. It was so
much...
What do
you think's going on there, though?
It was so much less fun than having pancakes for breakfast.
I mean, I think the only conclusion is that you and I have become less fun. Because, like, I would have enjoyed this 10 years ago, and I don't think I would enjoy it today. And, like, what the fuck is wrong with me?
I think even June was kind of surprised by how we were all like, I think the truth is that... I mean, I think that my body, well, I think both of us are some...
I think my body is a wonderland.
I was going to say, but I didn't want to. I think that both of us are people who are really aware of what we want to eat at any given time.
Yeah.
And I think that we have conditioned ourselves to want certain flavors at like certain times.
Yeah.
Like, I want savory flavors at dinner time.
And, yeah.
But
why
feels
can't
like,
we be like happy-go-lucky and carefree like Mr. Kara?
I don't know. She's better than we are.
Okay. So that's probably the answer that she was looking for. And problem solved.
I think another issue is that we always have some kind of like dessert after dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've eaten pancakes for dinner, you kind of like don't want dessert.
Yeah,
and there's something sad about that.
I agree.
Like, I love the counterpart of, like, you know, the savory dinner and then dessert.
Yeah. All right. How about now but wow?
Ooh, okay. Okay, so my now but wow for today is a new podcast. It's about a month old, and it's called The One Recipe. Stop laughing at me.
What if we had recorded all of these episodes and not released any of them, and then just dropped them all on the same day, like 575 episodes?
You are so messed up.
I mean,
up.
It wouldn't make any sense, but it would be really weird.
Wow, this
people
beer,
would talk about it.
This beer has done things to you. Okay, so I want to talk today about this new podcast called The One Recipe. It's hosted by Jesse Sparks, who's a senior editor at Eater. And what I love about this is, so for someone who, like, I am a cook who loves a repertoire. Like, I love to have, like, this recipe that I always make for this kind of pasta.
Sure.
And like this recipe we always do when we want like chicken tacos or whatever. Okay. So what this podcast does, The One Recipe, is that Jesse Sparks talks to chefs and cooks from all over the world about their like one go-to recipe.
Nice.
Okay. I think that it's going to be really great. I'm kind of amazed it's taken this long to get a podcast like this.
I'm really excited. I will subscribe.
Yeah. So anyway, it is it's put together by the same team as the people behind Splendid Table, and you can find it everywhere you find podcasts. It's called The One Recipe.
Our producer is Abby Circatella.
Indeed. And you can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and you can have like a chill good time with other Spilled Milk listeners by going to reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk and just like talk about whatever.
Yeah, bro.
And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that's been smooshed through
a membrane.
And now we're just a delicious sludge.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amsterburn. I said... This morning, never mind. I was going to try and like remember and then retell a joke that I made this morning.
Oh, about that always
involving
works well.
The musical Dear Evan Hansen, but maybe I should just like let it go.
Okay. Okay, let's start over.
All right, I'm going to clear my palate with a saltine.
You are so drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.